All right, so are you ready to tackle a trademark battle that's like a total touchdown of legal drama?
Yeah.
We're going deep on Indianapolis Colts v. Metropolitan Baltimore Football Club.
Oh, yeah, this one is a classic.
It really shows how trademark law can get tangled up with like diehard fan passion. It's fascinating stuff.
It really is. And this case really highlights how much a team name, especially when like the Colts becomes like a part of a city's whole identity. Like
Right.
it's more than just a brand on a jersey, you know?
Absolutely. And we're
Okay.
talking about the emotional fallout when the original Baltimore Colts moved to Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah, in 1984.
Right back in 84, leaving all those heartbroken fans behind. And then in 93, Baltimore gets a new team.
A Canadian Football League team this time.
Right. A CFL team. And guess what name they wanted?
I think I know where you're going with this, the Baltimore CFL Colts.
You got it. So that's where things get really interesting legally.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So the big question was, likelihood of confusion. Could the new Baltimore team use Colts without fans thinking they were connected to the Indianapolis Colts or the NFL? Did the court think that just adding CFL to the name was enough to make it clear they were different?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And in this case, the court basically said, nope.
Really?
Yeah, they didn't think that the average fan would necessarily even recognize what CFL stood for.
So they're saying like people wouldn't know it was the Canadian Football League.
Exactly. And that's a key point. As you study law, consumer perception, it's huge. It's not just about the legal technicalities, but how regular people out there understand these things.
It's all about what the average person thinks when they see that name.
Exactly.
Okay, but what really made this case so interesting was that they had evidence of actual confusion.
Oh, yeah.
A survey showed that a full 64% of football fans were confused about the two teams.
That's a pretty big number.
That's huge, right? So how much weight do courts actually give to those kinds of surveys?
A lot, actually. Even Judge Posner, who wrote the opinion for the court, he even admitted that those surveys aren't perfect. But even he said that a number like 54%, you can't ignore it. It really shows how important those surveys can be in a trademark case.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with a number that big.
Exactly.
Now, Baltimore tried to argue that the Indianapolis Colts had basically given up the Baltimore Colts trademark when they moved.
Right, because they were saying, well, they're not playing in Baltimore anymore, so why can't we use the name?
Yeah. So is it really that simple? Like, if you move, do you just lose your trademark rights?
Well, that's where we have to get into this idea of trademark abandonment.
Okay.
It's not just a matter of use it or lose it. It's a bit more complicated than that. There are specific legal things you have to prove to show abandonment.
So it's not automatic.
Right. And even if the Indianapolis Colts had abandoned like the specific Baltimore part of their name, there's this other thing called residual goodwill.
Residual goodwill.
Yeah. Basically, it means they still had a really strong claim to the Colts brand within pro football as a whole.
Okay, so even if they weren't the Baltimore Colts anymore, they were still the Colts.
Right.
And people still connected that name with their team.
Exactly.
I love that analogy Judge Posner used about the river. He said a team is kind of like a river, always changing, yet always the same.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic Posner line.
So even though the Baltimore Colts physically moved to Indianapolis, their identity, all those memories and emotions, they didn't just disappear.
Right, they flowed along with the name like a river.
And Baltimore couldn't just grab that name back like it was some lost piece of their history.
It's a really great way to understand how the court saw this case.
Yeah, it makes it much clearer. So residual goodwill. That's a powerful concept in trademark law.
It really is. Especially when you're dealing with something as emotionally charged as a sports team.
Exactly.
It's all about making sure that consumers aren't being misled or tricked.
Makes sense. But this case brings up some interesting questions too, doesn't it? Like, was the court maybe too focused on protecting the NFL's interests?
That's a good point.
I mean, couldn't the two teams have existed peacefully in different leagues?
No.
Like, you have the Jets in the NFL and the Jets in the NHL.
Right, so why not the Colts?
Exactly. Why couldn't that have worked?
Well, there are a few things that make this case a bit different, I think. The first thing is that you have this geographic overlap.
Meaning they're both in the same city.
Exactly. Both teams were trying to get fans in Baltimore,
Right.
so there's a much higher risk of confusion there than if they were in different parts of the country.
So location matters a lot in these cases.
It really does. And then there's that historical connection that we talked about.
Right, the Colts were a huge part of Baltimore's history.
Exactly. The name isn't just a name. It brings up all these memories and emotions for the fans.
So even though they're in different leagues, that shared history in the same city would still be a problem.
Exactly. And then there's also the issue of merchandise.
Right.
If fans weren't sure which team was which did, they might accidentally buy CFL merchandise thinking it was official NFL gear.
And that could hurt the Indianapolis Colts brand.
Exactly. So it wasn't just about protecting the NFL. It was also about protecting the Indianapolis Colts specific brand and their fans.
Right. Making sure that people weren't being tricked into buying the wrong thing.
Exactly. This case really shows how courts have to balance all these different factors, location history, the potential for confusion. It's not always a simple decision.
It's definitely complicated.
It really is. So welcome back to our deep dive into Indianapolis Colts v. Metropolitan Baltimore Football Club. And, you know, as we sort of dig into this, it wasn't just about protecting the Indianapolis Colts brand, you know?
Right.
This case really has some wider implications for, like, how we understand trademarks as a whole.
That's what's so cool about these deep dives.
Yeah.
You start with this one specific case, and then it kind of opens up all these other questions.
Exactly.
So, like, what are some of the broader legal takeaways from this Colts case?
Well, one of the big ones is that trademark rights, they can actually, like, outlast a mark being abandoned.
Okay.
You remember that whole concept of residual goodwill we were talking about?
Right. Like, even if a company is not using a trademark anymore, the feelings that people have about that brand can kind of linger.
Exactly. The court recognized that even if a company, like, stops using a trademark, the goodwill that's connected to it, it can still be there in people's minds.
So even if legally a trademark is, like, up for grabs, someone can't just come in and use it if there's a chance people will be confused.
Exactly. And that's especially true when the original trademark holder is still operating in, like, a related field, like the Indianapolis Colts were in the NFL.
Right. So it's not just about the name itself. It's about the whole context.
Exactly.
This really shows how trademark law isn't just about following, like, a strict set of rules.
Right.
It's about understanding how people perceive brands and making sure they aren't being tricked.
You got it.
Yeah.
And let's be real, in the world of sports, those perceptions are often really tied up with emotions and tradition and loyalty.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Think about all those iconic team names like the Yankees, the Celtics, the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Those names mean so much to people.
Exactly. And the courts understand that. They factor in those deep connections when they're making decisions about these cases. It's not just a cold legal calculation.
It's about the fans.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned that this case has implications beyond just sports. So, like, what are some other scenarios where this might come up?
That's a great question. Think about, like, a clothing company that goes out of business and abandons its trademark. Then another company comes along and wants to use that same name for furniture.
Okay.
Even though the products are different, there might still be confusion if that original clothing brand had, like, strong residual goodwill.
So the court would have to consider whether people would think that the new furniture company was somehow related to the old clothing company, even though it's a totally different product.
Exactly. Trademark law really aims to prevent consumers from being deceived, no matter what the industry is.
It's about fairness.
Exactly.
But doesn't this case also raise some questions about free speech?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Some people might say that preventing the new Baltimore team from using Colts was like a form of censorship.
Right.
But the court disagreed. They said that trademark law is about preventing consumer deception, not about silencing someone's expression.
So they're saying the Baltimore team was still free to choose a different name.
Exactly. As long as it didn't create confusion. And they became the Baltimore Stallions.
Oh, yeah, the Stallions.
Which is a pretty cool name, actually.
It is.
And it didn't run into any trademark problems.
So they found a way to have a unique identity without causing any legal trouble.
Exactly.
So this case really highlights that balance between protecting intellectual property and allowing for freedom of expression.
It really does. It's a tough balance, and it's something that courts are always grappling with.
It's not always a clear-cut answer.
Definitely not.
Now, speaking of courts, we were talking about Judge Posner earlier and how he's known for his really interesting writing style. Did he have any of his classic Posnerisms in this case?
He sure did. His analogy of a pro sports team being like Heraclitus's river, always changing yet always the same, that's a pretty famous one.
I'm not sure I get that one. Can you explain it?
Sure. Basically, he's saying that even though a team might change cities or owners, you know, its fundamental identity, its legacy, it carries on like a river.
Oh, okay, I see. So even though the Baltimore Colts physically moved to Indianapolis, mm-hmm. all those memories and emotions that are tied to the team, they didn't just vanish. They went with them.
Exactly. And that's why the Indianapolis Colts were able to argue so effectively that using Colts in Baltimore would just cause a lot of confusion. It all goes back to that river of history and emotion.
That's a really cool way to put it.
Judge Posner, he really knows how to make these legal concepts come to life.
Yeah, he's a great writer.
He is.
So before we move on, let's just make sure we're all clear on the key takeaways from this case.
That's good.
What are the big things we should remember?
All right, so first and foremost, remember that consumer perception is everything in trademark law.
Right.
It doesn't matter how strong your legal arguments are. What really matters is how the average person out there views your brand.
It's all about what the average person thinks.
Exactly. And those consumer surveys, they can be so valuable. They provide evidence of how people are actually reacting to these brands in the real world.
Real world evidence. That's key.
Exactly. And the second big takeaway is that abandoning a trademark, it doesn't mean it just disappears.
Right.
Even if a trademark is technically abandoned its history, the feelings it evokes those can still create confusion down the road.
Residual goodwill.
Well,
it's powerful.
It really is. You can't just assume that a trademark is fair game just because it looks abandoned.
Right.
And lastly, remember that trademarks in sports, they have this unique emotional weight.
They really do.
Courts understand that team names represent more than just logos and merchandise. They're symbols of a city's history, its pride, its connection to its team.
And courts recognize that those feelings are really powerful.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at any sports-related trademark case, you have to think about those emotions in that cultural context.
You got it. It's about seeing the bigger picture and understanding all the different nuances of the situation.
And I think we've done a good job of that today.
I think so, too. We've really explored some complex ideas in a way that's hopefully easy to understand.
And for anyone listening, if you've ever been curious about the world of sports law, this case is a perfect example of how fascinating it can be.
I completely agree. It shows how legal principles actually play out in the real world, affecting businesses, organizations, and even everyday fans.
Absolutely. So welcome back to the Deep Dive. And as we kind of wrap up our look at Indianapolis Colts v. Metropolitan Baltimore Football Club, you know, it really makes you think about how much power a name has, especially in sports.
It's true. We don't always realize how much weight a name carries. But for a sports team, it's so much more than just a label. You know,
right.
It's like this whole history, the sense of community, all these emotions for the fans.
It's true. Like, think about it. When you hear names like the Yankees, the Lakers, the Cowboys, I mean, you don't just think about the players or the sport, right?
No way.
You instantly picture those big moments, those legendary athletes, maybe even your own memories connected to those teams.
Exactly. And that's what makes these trademark disputes in sports so interesting. You're not just dealing with legal stuff about logos and brands, you know?
Right.
You're dealing with the heart of what it means to be a fan.
Absolutely. So in this case, the court sided with the Indianapolis Colts, saying that the new Baltimore team couldn't use the Colts name because it would cause too much confusion. So what kind of lasting impact did that decision have on trademark law, particularly when it comes to sports?
Well, I think it really reinforced this principle that you can't just abandon a trademark and expect it to vanish, especially when there's all that residual goodwill attached to it.
Right. Those feelings and associations, they don't just go away overnight.
Nope. It's like that river analogy that Judge Posner used, you know?
Right.
That legacy. It keeps flowing even if the team moves to a new city. But this case also sparked some debate too, right?
Yeah.
Some people felt like the court was giving too much power to the big leagues like the NFL.
Yeah, like they were saying, it's not fair that they get to control everything.
Right. There's a valid argument that those leagues already have a lot of control, and this kind of decision could make it tough for new teams to create their own identity.
But then there's the other side that says protecting those trademarks is really important for the value of those leagues.
Exactly. It's a tricky balance to find.
It really is. So as we wrap up this deep dive, is there one big takeaway, something our listeners can apply to any situation where names and branding are important, not just sports?
I think the biggest thing to remember is that a name has power. You know, names evoke emotions, they shape how we see things, and they can even influence what we decide to do.
Right.
So whether you're choosing a name for your business, a product, or even just thinking about your own personal brand, you've got to be mindful of what message you're sending.
Because a name can become so much more than just a word.
Absolutely. It can become a symbol, a legacy. And that's something worth thinking about.
Well said. Well, thanks for guiding us through this case. It's been really interesting.
You're welcome. It's been fun.
And to our listeners, thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive. Until next time, keep those brainwaves flowing.